Good afternoon, everyone. This is Stephen McCarthy of the McCarthy Project, where we have been attacking life and sport since 2001. And today I have the opportunity of chatting with Dave Scott, who has been one of the leaders in the world of triathlon over the last couple of decades, and really do feel that he has some unique insight into the world of training young athletes. And so he was kind enough to come on the show today to share his thoughts on the world of triathlon and some trends and how we can help young people to enjoy the sport rather than grind themselves up and get mad and not feel good about fit themselves physically because they're pushing themselves too hard. So how are you doing today, Dave?
Good, Stephen. Very good. Here in Boulder, Colorado.
Yes.
Weather's always nice.
Yes, that is true. I have some friends that live out in Larkspur, which is another suburb of Colorado, and I always go out there, and it's like, you know what, if I ever move someplace, this would definitely be the place to move to. So anyways, let's just start off in general. I know that the majority of our listeners will know who you are, obviously, but you have now moved over to the coaching side of the industry, and I'd like for you to kind of give us your background and what your motives were and kind of what you're looking for to help athletes.
Well, first off, you didn't age me as much as most people do, Stephen. actually,
yeah, but I'm old too, so that's a...
I started the sport in 1976, did probably one of the very first triathlons ever, and ended up doing a couple small ones in the late 70s and then 80s. I did the Ironman race many times and continued racing into the 90s, and I still shave my legs, and I think I'm always ready, but I'm a little bit older now, so I jump into a few races each year, one or two races. So, but prior to my athletic career in triathlon, I was coaching. I was actually started coaching and swimming with youth, and then I coached a master's program, and then gravitated into the sport. I didn't think it would really be a career for me, so my background's in exercise physiology, and I always had a keen interest in applying not only what I was doing, but the athletes that I was working with. So I've been a coach as long as I've been an athlete, and particularly in the last 20 years, I've taken on kind of a wide myriad of athletes. I work with some youth. I work with some of the world champions, Craig Alexander and Chrissy Wellington, and a whole variety of amateurs. But I've seen lots of kids gravitate into the sport over the years, and initially developed the first triathlon coaching program with our existing governing body out of Colorado Springs. So I've had my fingers in the youth program. I have three kids myself, and I have one that's now 22 who's an avid triathlete. So I've kind of watched his development as well.
It does bring an interesting perspective when you actually have kids. I know when I started in the strength training world in 2001, my kids were only 4 and 5. And then now that I see them getting up into the high school ages, I see a lot of both sides. And it really does give you a great perspective when you're trying to work with young people and then have your own day-to-day living, you know, with your own family.
Yes. Well, it's a whole different perspective. Sometimes the dynamics don't work terribly well, but other times they do flow nicely. So
that's not what my kids tell me. They tell me they listen to me all the time.
Yeah, right.
Anyways, well, that's cool. And I to get back to the age question, you see, I'm old enough to know the difference too. So I don't want anybody telling me that I'm getting close to 50 as well. So I'm very much aware of that. But the big thing that I wanted to originally contact you about is the development of the sport, which has gotten a lot of exposure, you know, in the last, you know, probably 10 years or so. Before, when you were in it, was kind of more of, hey, we're doing this for fun and we are doing it because we love it type of a scenario. But it has come much more corporate, a lot of money, you know, flowing around it. And hence more kids are trying it and getting excited about it, as anybody that has a little bit of desire to do more than one thing than just play one sport. I mean, it's a natural occurrence where you play you actually do three different things. But give us your idea about young people in general and the number of people and what you see as a trend now before we go into specifics.
Well, I think there is certainly a big movement. I mean, I travel a lot, and statewide there's a big movement, and certainly internationally it's much broader than it is here in the United States, because they have more organized club programs and developmental programs. If you go to Australia, you'll see youth 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 that start once or twice a week, and then they in each of the disciplines, and they're pretty active through their adolescence, and by the time they're 18 or 19, a lot of them are pretty fairly seasoned. I think one of the things that we have seen here in the States is that a lot of kids are pigeonholed to one particular sport too early, whether it's soccer, it's Pee Wee League football, it's gymnastics, whatever that area is, and they don't have an opportunity to really fully develop their skill set. And I see a lot of imbalances with kids, and certainly some that are burned out that come into the sport of triathlon that were, you know, possibly in gymnastics, and I'm not just picking on that particular sport, but now they want to do triathlons. A lot of them have structural or muscle imbalances, and so when I work with the athletes, and this works all the way up to seasoned adults, I just don't like to have them swim, bike, run. I have them do what I call a strength and injury prevention program simultaneously with those three disciplines, and I actually limit the amount of time that they're going to be training in the three, so that they don't let go of at least twice a week or three times a week where they're doing some strengthening and also stretching. And, you know, I've seen younger kids that have gotten the sport that are completely bound up, particularly in their quads and their lower back. We see them really, really tight in their hip flexors, and you put them on a bike, and structurally they just don't have the flexibility even to get down into the aero position, which they want to get into. So they end up loading their back and their upper hamstring, and that creates a lot of havoc.
It's interesting, because we're going to cover a couple different areas that already have piqued my interest. One is, what is your concept? And I'll give you a little bit of idea. I'm going to name it individualism. But it seems as though the more you get along in the training thing, and I hear you saying, is that really there are no cookie cutter come in and do this 3-day a week type of programs. It is based on the individual. Give us your ideas about training programs that maybe, hey, I read on, you know, XYZ triathlon, and they said do XYZ because Chrissy Wellington does it.
Well, if I understand your question, Stephen, obviously been coaching a long time, but I think that people can develop, and certainly kids can develop, if they have an opportunity to do the activity twice a week, yes. Two swims, two bikes, two runs, and if they can get in two strength and injury prevention segments, very, very short, that could precede any one of those six other sessions that they're doing, they can really limit their time and gain productivity in their sports very, very quickly. The worst thing that I see happen, and I see a lot of it in running, is that kids end up running too far too quickly, and they develop knee and hip and foot issues because they've been overloaded, or they have soleus or lower leg issues. So I like to keep the sessions fairly short to teach them proper biomechanics, and this is a real gross oversight that more is better, and I think if you look at the best athletes in any sport and you put them together in triathlon, most of the people have fairly good biomechanics, and the ones that are really going to excel will particularly have very good run biomechanics. A lot of kids that have not had swimming technique, you can take that type A kid or the type A parent and say, just go in there and swim more meters or yards and more time, you're going to get faster, and it doesn't work that way. If they don't use the proper technique, they end up just repeating the same patterns that are improper. So I like to limit the amount of time that that kids and adults, and I have as kind of a steadfast rule, I say you don't neglect the strength and stretching program, because I really feel it's sort of a prerequisite to maintain longevity in the sport. And this is from youth all the way up to my oldest guy that I coach is 78 years old, so he's still on a strength and program as well.
Because then let's go over to the other aspect too. Then, is it relates to in the world of triathlon, there are so many really things that are, like, I heard one time somebody came into the store. I used to own a retail store for all your listeners. And he said, well, if I'm north of the North American border, I eat a certain bar. And if I go below a certain parallel, meaning south of the border, then I eat a different bar because my body really does not handle the nutrition as well. And I really feel that sometimes a lot of these old wives' tales get to have these legs of things like this. How do you look at training and nutrition, you know, and strength training in the world of endurance sports?
Well, it's a very big question. I think first you have to look at the science. I have kind of a science background, so I like to look to see, you know, what do the actual studies show? And I think that's an important area for, you know, all parents that are bringing their kids. And, you know, how do I apply the science in a proper form? The second one is to actually look at, you know, what are the best athletes doing? And I hear this, you know, quite often. I hear other swim instructors say, hey, you need to swim like Michael Phelps or Ryan Lochte or Natalie Coughlin. Well, sure, we'd all like to swim like the Olympians. They're hypermobile in their shoulders and their back. Most of them have incredible plantar flexion. They can point their toes, and they look like flippers, and they gain a lot of propulsion out of their legs. Most of the non-swimmers, from youth all the way up to adults, are really highly inflexible in their upper back and their low back, and their hip flexors are really tight, and consequently their body position begins to drop a little bit. So you can't always replicate the best. It's good to look at the best, but we can't always quite replicate that. So you need to adapt some of the technique. And, again, it takes, a refined eye in particularly running and also swimming to look at the athlete and say, you know what, you've got this foot that kind of everts when you run. I bet your hamstring is tight on that right side, or you're a little bit weak in that right upper glute or low back. Once you have a technician or a coach that can look at the athlete, then you can make subtle changes. And so I think from there, you can have the athlete be aware that body part isn't working properly. So they have to repeat the same pattern over again so the nervous system adapts to that change. But also they have to do the strength training so that they don't have this, you know, quirky hoppity hop when they run, or they have this hip drop, or this funny arm. But there's no two individuals that look the same. So look at the science, look at the best, and then work with your athlete. And I think trying to understand either from a technical side and getting the assistance so that it enables you to do that, whether it's a coach or a physical therapist, that can look at, or biomechanist that can look at technique. I'm a real stickler for technique, and I have a group here in Boulder that I coach that has a lot of the world's best athletes, and we get them in the water, and sometimes within a week's time, all of a sudden they develop these little idiosyncrasies that they're unaware of. The patterning starts to change. They don't feel as fluid. And everyone needs to be reminded. You know, Michael Phelps wasn't born with a perfect stroke. You know, his coaches are always working with it to refine it, and it does change.
And see, I think there's so many things, because one, you talked about the individual things that happen in each athlete's life. It's not a science is a to get you in the ballpark, but it becomes some semblance of an art in combining all those concepts together. And that's what I hear you saying, is that you need to get in the ballpark with science, use it and apply it as much as you can, and then bring in, you know, what's happening to you specifically. Is that correct?
Yeah, because training, part of it is an art form, and you hit right on it. I coach coaches, and we talk about the art form of of teaching, and it can't just be from a textbook. So, and part of the art form is also listening to the athlete, because it's not just the physical attributes of an athlete. I mean, the emotional and psychological side, and certainly with kids, is huge to motivate them properly, so that you know they don't feel like they are a failure every time they finish the workout. That they there is some good that they derive from the workout, and really the goodness that should be derived from a workout is that they are actually elevating this morphine-like effect, these endorphins that actually make you feel good. And adults certainly know this feeling. That's it's sort of a your satiety center that says, gee, I just did this workout, and I feel more calm and more relaxed. Well, kids feel the same way. So it's not always about having perfect form. It's not always about going fast. It's about going through the effort and sometimes not necessarily succeeding based on your time or your power output or your swim stroke or whatever it is. It's actually based on, gee, I feel better than when I got in the water. And I kind of have a steadfast rule with everyone that I coach. I said, give yourself at least 20 minutes in a workout and start off a little bit slower. Give yourself 20 minutes, because generally at about that point where you're, if you're doing semi-continuous exercise, and it could be, you know, a set of intervals, or it could be broken up, but you're getting your heart rate up, your skin temperature's warming up, and all of a sudden you're kind of out of that element or that worry that you may have, you start releasing those endorphins, those feel-good morphine-like chemicals that say, you know, this is kind of fun. And I think that that fun element of training, as arduous as it can be, is always part of a routine. I mean, people ask me, how do you still like to swim, bike, run after all these years? And I said, yeah, you know, when I have a free day and I can go out and smash myself on all three of them, boy, that's a great day for me. I mean, I still enjoy doing it. But there are other days where I'm pressed for time. I think I can get in 22 minutes on a run. And usually it just sort of baits me, but 95% of the time I feel better doing it.
See, that's another thing too, and I think I'd like for you to talk a little bit about the love of the sport, you know, and so many times I think with endurance sports, especially, is that because in order to be good, you have to be out there a while. There's just no other way around it. But What have you found is the best way to build that love of either the game, the sport, the feelings, you know, what you're accomplishing? How do you balance all those, and how do you get athletes to move to the next step?
Good question. Everyone's kind of individual, but you said one word, and the word is that it always has to be kind of a game, and it's a mental game. No one can go into a workout, and let's say you've got an hour run, and the coach or your group says, this is going to be hard. And you're thinking, well, I'm kind of tired before the outset here. My feet don't feel very good, and I didn't get great sleep, and we're going to do an hour hard run. But if you break that up into smaller segments, all of a sudden it becomes palatable. And any athlete in a race, certainly in a triathlon, if they look at the enormity of the race, whether it's even a sprint distance, which is sort of a misnomer by the term, but let's say it's an hour plus race, or Olympic distance race, and it's 2.5 hours, or a half Ironman, and it's 5 hours, you always want to break it up into smaller segments. And either it's a mental roadmap of those smaller segments, so you have an idea, gee, that's a tough hill there, but it's tough for everyone, and all I have to do is just to think about being fluid and making sure that I'm not robotic, and I'm not panicking, and I'm going to glide over that hill because I do those hills in my workout. You get through that one difficult spot, and all of a sudden you move on to the next. There isn't an athlete alive that doesn't play that game. And I play the game all the time. If I get in the water and I'm with the fastest guys in the pool, I can't beat them anymore. I'm an old guy. But I like to fight like fury to make sure I can stay on the set and play the game and not let them lap me. Because I feel like, gee, if they lap me, you know, they've won this little game today, and it's all in good spirit. It doesn't demoralize my fate, and you know, I'll come back the next day for a real drubbing, but it allows me to play the game. And another analogy is, you know, people always ask, you know, how'd you get through the Ironman? It's a long day. And I said, you know, it goes by so fast. It just you know, floats by. And the reason is that I would always break up, particularly the cycling and the run leg, into segments. And so I get through that segment. Okay, now I've got this next part. And I would always be at the moment. And I tell all my athletes, if you're always looking ahead, you can never be present. And there's a phrase that I use in coaching. I say, do what you can do at the moment. And that moment is really vital, because if you're cognizant of what you're doing, whether it's your breathing rate or how your foot is landing when you're running, or if you're relaxing your shoulders and your face, and you're not thinking about your competitor that's 30 yards up the way, or you're thinking about the last 3 miles that you've got to run, you're going to be able to really exploit your talents. And I think a lot of people let down themselves as far as, you know, boosting their ultimate potential, because they're never really focused right at that time. And that allows you to really attain the highest levels of success.
It's interesting to talk about the mind, because so much of endurance sport is about the mind, you know, and how you approach and how you're dealing with problems along the way, you know, and how the dashboard comes alive in your brain. But one of the things I want to go to is recovery, because that's the big, you know, in my mind, endurance. If you can recover better than everybody else, either inside the race, after the race, then you're going to be a better athlete pretty quickly. How do you view recovery, and how do you promote it?
Well, there's three general facets of training. One is progression, the second one is overload, and the third one is recovery. And you have to think of those in three distinct and equal areas: progression, overload, recovery. And I think a lot of athletes do neglect that side. That doesn't always necessarily mean just go easy or take a day off, but you have to incorporate lighter days where you're doing the activity, because quite often low aerobic exercise enhances that recovery, and it also enhances what we talked about before, was that those endorphins. So if you're just programmed to doing exercise 3 times a week and that's your schedule, that would work fine. But if you have possibly a light day in between where you're exercising, you still get that feel-good endorphin-like effect. There's a term called overreaching, which quite often can lead to overtraining. And as physiologists define overreaching, it's really sort of that stale feeling that we have. It's very definable if you're doing a triathlon training, because your legs feel heavy. You feel very lethargic. You have the inability to drive your heart rate up, even though your workout says you've got to go hard in this segment. Your brain has almost this internal governor to protect your organs, because it says, you know what, you're fatigued, your immune system is really vulnerable. So people can reach this overreaching type of stage because they haven't allowed enough recovery, and the overload and the progression has gotten too great. So if you do feel stale, and again, one of the definable terms is very, very heavy legs. You go up a couple flights of stairs and you're thinking, gee whiz, I don't think I've exercised a stitch in my life. My legs are just throbbing. And you lose your motivation. What I recommend, and what physiologists will recommend, is that you actually take 2 days off completely and you don't do anything. You kind of step away from it. It refreshes your mind. It allows you to be hungry. And then take 3 very light aerobic days, for example, 20 minutes to an hour of light exercise for the next 3 days, so day 3, 4, 5. And usually by day 6, your body has now recovered. Your mind has said, gee, I want to get back to my routine. And by day 6, you can just jump back in at 100%. Sometimes building in these blocks for seasoned athletes, they recognize when they reach the point where, you know what, I've done too much. For an athlete who doesn't really recognize the symptoms, don't mentally beat yourself up if you get to the point where you can't do the workout. And it's okay to have a couple of light days, or to take 2 days off, or to do what I just defined. It's really a kind of a 5-day block, because that overreaching is I would say, almost 100% assured for anyone who's doing a triathlon. They're going to find that they're not a robot, and they're not as resilient as maybe their next-door neighbor, that they need to take a break. And Just one other thing, Steve, that you mentioned just as far as recovery. You know, after a race, the best thing that you can do is actually to get back in the water and just swim very gently. I actually have people just do an easy breaststroke, so they and very, very gently, because their legs are not going in that sagittal plane moving forward. And they stretch their adductors, muscles on the inside of their legs. They can stretch their quads. They can relax their back a little bit. Do some easy back flutter kick, but that actually enhances your circulation and also your lymphatic system. So it's actually good to exercise if you can by getting in the water right after you race. And the next day after the race, it's a great idea to swim gentle. And if you have massage or you have a PT work at all, of course, those will all enhance it. But rather than just saying, gee, my legs are real sore from the race and not do anything for 2 days, that will really slow down the recovery process. So it's good to move post-exercise.
All I'm saying, I love your ideas, because essentially you got to think about it. I think there's so many people in the endurance world that do not think about the world of recovery, and that if you can recover, the workouts will be all the better if you're able to promote that recovery in every aspect, either inside the workout, after the workout, in the evening, while you're sleeping. Well, Dave, thank you very much. We have kind of come to the end of our time today. Where can people get a hold of you if they, because I know that you've got a lot of really cool coaching programs for individuals.
Well, I have a website. Probably the easiest thing is just to Google Dave Scott, and there's either an astronaut or me, and my website is davescottinc.com, davescottinc.com, and I have training programs at all different levels. I also do consultations at my office or via Skype, so if people are interested in. I'm kind of like a dentist. I fix a lot of programs that are existing and try to have people understand why they're doing certain things. I also meet with their coach and athlete at the same time, either via phone or Skype or internet. And I have a lot of strength and injury prevention programs. A number of them for the hips and the glutes and the back, which are really vulnerable, and also the rotator cuff, shoulders. So I have those on my website, and I travel quite a bit and do lots of clinics and talks. So if you're ever interested in having me come to your community, we need to keep talking.
Absolutely. All righty. Well, thank you very much, Dave. We would
Pleasure.
Love to have you on in the future.
Well, hopefully I can join you, Stephen. All the best to you.